on 1116 SEN, Melbourne's home of footy, The Science of Sport, with Craig Harper, Jackie Lada and Mark Fabreo.
Well, good morning, folks. Good morning, Jackie Lauder. Professor Mark Fabreo is not here, so I'm not saying hello to him. Good morning, Mel Bourne, The Science of Sports, 8 minutes past 10 o'clock. Maybe we should come up with another name. Good morning, Jackie Lauder.
Good morning.
How are you? We are a sports... Good, thank you. We're a sports station.
Yes.
But we're more than just The Science of Sport, but maybe that's just a hook to get the multitudes in.
Yeah, I like our name.
You like that?
Yeah, I do. I think it... Because it covers everything.
It does. And if you are a first-time listener, one, where have you been? And two, it is the little forum where we dissect and discuss and explore
everything.
Everything sport or sport-related, be that the weekend warrior, the elite AFL player, the Olympic athlete, or Jackie or I, who are just looking to kind of maintain some semblance of health and function as Jackie heads into her 40s and I head into my 90s.
Yeah.
How far away are you from 40?
I'm there.
Are you 40?
Yeah.
Oh, you look good. What are you, 4-0 or 4-1?
Well, we're roundabout.
Such a girl. What does that girls have? Oh, you know, I'm there. I'm thereabouts. What is that? Anyone got an idea for? Is that because women, do you think, are judged more harshly on their
Correct.
Age?
Yep.
Right. So,
But I don't ask guys their age either. It doesn't particularly bother me as long as you can do the job you need to be doing.
Where does that come from that, we're talking with Jackie Lauder, psychologist, where does that come from that ageist kind of perspective where before you're exactly right, and it even happens in footy. Like I think we said on this show earlier this year, if Boomer Harvey was producing the numbers that he was producing and he was 26, not 38 or
no
whatever
one
he was,
would have cared.
No one's going, well, it's his time. But you go, well, hang on, just take his age out of the equation. Someone will correct me if I'm wrong on the age. Jackie, could you check Boomer Harvey's age?
He's about 38.
I think he was 38.
Yeah.
But if he was a 20-whatever-year-old producing the same numbers, 38 is correct, thank you, nobody would be questioning whether or not he should play next year.
Yeah, I know. I just think it should always be done on someone's ability, whether that's in sport or in work or whatever it is.
And the funny thing with him is, it's not like, oh, yeah, but he's constantly injured. No, he's not.
No, he's not.
And it's not like, oh, yeah, but he's super slow. No, he's not.
Yeah, he was in the top 20. Like, I still find that astounding. But anyway, and I know teams have plans and blah, 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 but a player who's sitting in the top 20 in the AFL for their position and possessions and whatever... surely would be in your plans.
It
but anyway.
Would indeed. I guess there are lots of sports, though, when we talk about performance, there are some sports where athletes, for whatever reason, whether it's psychological, emotional, strategic, or just, you know, runs on the board, age isn't as much of an issue. Like, I don't think...
Golf.
Yeah, golf. And some sports where we've seen elite rowers at Olympic level into their 40s, who are world champions, Olympic champions.
There was a gymnastics lady that came back after having kids and she was 33 and got a bronze medal.
She was older. I'm sure she was older. I'm sure she was like 38 or something.
Oh, was she?
Somebody will tell us.
Okay. Well, she was in her 30s after going away and having kids and considering the age of that sport where, you know, they're kind of peaking very early.
Mm. And I think also... Sports where people are not, like, for example, you look at boxing, of course. Well, sadly, too many boxers go on too long, I guess. But things like AFL and rugby league and rugby union and, you know, of course, UFC, which is on the rise, MMA in general, where people are being punched in the head a lot or hit or hurt or there's a lot of impact. There's a lot of impact on the body. Whereas with things like even running, even though there's a lot of impact but there's not concussion, you know, there's not the massive trauma injuries that we get.
Oh, I was going to say, I've been doing running. Don't say there's no trauma.
No. But I'm talking about the massive kind of impact injuries.
Yeah, it's different.
Whereas with rowing, it's a very, and we're using that as a sport where people have performed into their late 30s and early 40s at
if
a very,
you keep
very
your back right.
Was it Sir
rowing.
Steve Redgrave? Was that him, the English dude? And there was also.
Drew Ginn went for a long time.
Oh, yeah. The awesome foursome. Yeah. They were about 65 when they hummed that. They're awesome, weren't they?
Yep. I ran my first 10K this week.
Did you do it as part of an event or did you do
yeah,
it solo?
Yeah, this is the event. So oh, right. I won't be back on the program for a few
good,
weeks.
Good for you. Nice.
Okay. Just it's impressive.
So where did you run the 10? Was it what was the event?
Well, there wasn't an event. It was a training run.
Oh, okay.
Because I've got to run a 10K event in January. So I'm heading off overseas at the end of December. And my sister and I are doing a run around Disney World in Florida. Mm. So it's a four-day event.
You know, everything in me, because I'm a boy, everything in me wants to ask you how fast you ran and how long it took, but I'm not going to ask. The fact that you ran 10Ks is awesome.
I'm actually not even really focusing on the time and that. It's just getting it done because, like I said, my sister runs events, so I'm doing it to support her. If I'm going to be there for 4 days, I may as well run two of the events. So I'm doing the 5 and the 10K.
Anyone who can run 10 kilometres, anyone, period, who can run 10 kilometres without stopping is in pretty good shape.
Yeah, I was happy with it. I'm sore.
Or even a couple little stops. Just off the SMS, we're talking about whether or not we should change the name of our show. Dave in Cranbourne says, Triple H, higher, healthier, happier. What about harpier? We could have just, no. Okay. Higher, healthier,
it worries me
higher.
that came into your head so quickly.
Yeah, it starts with H. Higher. I don't know that, could be a double-edged sword, the higher in the title. What about athletes who tend to be better when they're younger, but for a range of reasons, not necessarily physiological, fall away? Like we see...
That can be their management of how they were treated. Like we see this particularly with runners, where if they're overdoing it and overtraining early and they're getting great results when they're young, but we can't sustain that because as their body is growing, they're getting a lot of stress fractures when they're young and so therefore their bones aren't thickening up and laying as we need them to. Mm. So it's a real problem if you overtrain too early. And I say to all my clients, if I give you two options, number one is you can be the number one junior in the world, but remember juniors finishes when you're 18. Mm. Or you can have a 10 to 15 year senior career. Which one do you want? They're all going to take the senior career.
Yeah, of course.
So that's how I explain it to them, is that as a junior, it's great and we celebrate if you have great results, but that does not determine if you're going to be an amazing senior, because how we manage your body early on and we teach you about the sport and you get a bit of resilience, you learn, you know, the good, the bad and whatever. I prefer a junior who has a bit of an up and down career. Because I think they're better equipped heading into seniors.
What about sports where they are at an advantage, kind of almost pre-puberty, like ladies gymnastics? So my training partner, his daughter is, I think, 11 now, and she's been alternating between, I forget, there's different levels, but when she was flat out, when she was 9 or 10 and ranked 1 or 2 in the country, I think, 32 hours, 9 years old, 10 years old, 32 hours of training a week. And even if you can manage that physically, which is a big question mark, and how do you even try to manage a 9-year-old's body at that level? But that's what they do.
Yep.
And the reality is, if you're not doing that, you're getting nowhere near the Olympics, which is... You go, well, then is this a good sport? If that's what you have to put 9 and 10 year olds, like, you're not going to do 8 hours a week of gym and get anywhere near an elite level gymnast.
But an 11-year-old's also not making the Olympic team. So you've got to have some balance as well. They've got to have some social skills and have time. Like, I don't know, I'm a big one for having balance. 32 hours for a 9 or an 11-year-old's body is way too much.
Well, I think what we know now is that what's good is, we use this term, it's a bit of a fluffy term, and Puritans, straighty 180 science people don't love it, but we use it colloquially, and the term is biological age. Mm. And kind of what it means is, okay, so I've got a 53-year-old, I've been here for 53 years on the planet, that's my chronological age. And then we do some testing and we test, you know, strength and power and speed and flexibility and aerobic endurance and muscular endurance and reaction time. And there are different tests, but you test a whole lot of variables. You do a lifestyle questionnaire, you take a little bit of blood, test a few things as well. So there are different levels of comprehensiveness with these tests.
Yep.
But then you go, all right, here are Craig's results or here are Jackie's results. And then we compare those individual results to a whole lot of other results that we call normative data, and you go, here's 20,000 other people, here's Jackie. Here's their results, here's their age. Now, Jackie's 40, but her biological age, because she runs 10Ks, doesn't smoke, doesn't do drugs, doesn't smash herself, sleeps well, blah, 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 her biological age is 31,
yep.
Right? And so I think that we now kind of correlate more than we ever did the relationship between what we do to our body. Like, we've always known this, but we now can kind of almost measure it.
What we do
to our body and how old, for want of a better term, in inverted commas, our body is. And conversely, and I mean this with love and care, and I say this to them, the addicts and alcoholics that I work with on a regular basis, I work with some 25-year-olds that are walking around in a 50-year-old body.
Yeah.
And I tell them, and I go, champ, you need to, seriously, and they know this is no revelation, this is no insult.
Yep.
But it's amazing, either way, whether or not you're managing your body well or you're trashing your body, whether or not you're maximizing or destroying your genetic potential, that your body, you know, of course, there's a preset genetic component to what will be and what won't be. But beyond that, there's so much variability and so much kind of power in our hands in terms of what we create.
I think, too, people get a little bit excited. Like, you'll see after the Australian Open, a lot of people take up tennis. They'll see the Melbourne Marathon, and a lot of people who were going there to watch someone else will go, right, I'm going to do that. And they can make these decisions quickly and then don't go and get the right advice to go, okay, well, how do I prepare? Let's say someone's 50 and they're 12 months out from the next Melbourne Marathon.
Mm.
Go and see the right people and find your baseline first before you just start jumping into a whole heap of training and everything else. Let's get a look at where your overall health is. Because for you, the right program might be starting very, very slowly, but we need to get your diet right. We need to get your sleep right. And the other thing that I think gets so underestimated is just recovery.
Mm.
We see on TV, you know, for our footballers and our rugby players, our netballs and all the high level, what they show on TV when they show their training is that intensity where they're absolutely smashed and they're throwing water over their heads and whatever. What people don't understand is that might be from a 45 to an hour's training session. They will then spend more hours in recovery mode with massages and ice baths and walking in the water and all that sort of stuff, but they don't see it. So people will come in and say, oh, I need to be doing this many hours a week. I'm like, where are you getting that from?
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're not an elite athlete. And I say, well, that's actually not what our elite athletes do. They have high intensity sessions, short bursts, and lots of really good balanced recovery.
For sure. 9429 1116 if you want to chat with Jackie and or myself. 9429 1116 if you want to send us a message. 0433 98 1116. I think the thing, Jack, with all of this stuff is trying to, you know, I say to people who listen to the show that when I'm out and about, oh, I love the show, listen to the show, da-da. And I always say, so see what resonates for you, right? And then take Mark's, Jackie's, my advice, listen to the conversations. Don't take anything as gospel. Just take it as something to be taken for a test drive, perhaps.
Yep.
If we go, here's an idea, a thought, a concept, a construct, a strategy, go, maybe I will cut out grog 5 days a week. Oh, you know, maybe that'll work for me. Or maybe I do need 10% more sleep or whatever it is. But the thing is, for all of us, and this is what we don't get taught enough, and you and I both teach it, is that each of us needs to find our blueprint.
Correct.
So the thing for, there is no generic program, folks. There is no generic set amount of sleep that you need, that Jackie needs. That we don't all need the same amount of sleep. We don't all need the same amount of fluid. We don't all need, you know, Jackie might have 1,000 milligrams of sodium a day. She's fine. I have that much and my blood pressure goes through the roof because of physiological variability. So with all of this stuff, with no matter who you're listening to, you know, if it's a doctor, if it's a dietitian, if it's an exercise physiologist, if it's a psychologist, if it's anybody in the health and wellness space, remember that all of us are taking all of our experience, our training, our knowledge, our education, and we're taking our best guess.
And also, not one of us is going to be able to do absolutely everything for you. That's why you generally will put a team around you. You'll have a podiatrist for your feet. You'll have, you know, a psychologist if you're having some trouble with some things. You'll have an exercise physiologist or a massage therapist or a doctor or a physio. Like, I think it scares me when people come in and they say, oh, you know, whether it be their personal trainer or their exercise fears or their doctor is doing their dietary stuff and everything else. I'm like, oh, hang on. Everyone's got specialties and we all have a good generic knowledge. But if you really want to get everything in place, please go and see the specialist in each of those areas so that you've got the right program for you.
And see, the trouble with this, Ninette in Traralgon, we're coming to you in 1 second, so go nowhere. And yes, my producer is out there going, you need to go to a break. We'll go to a break very soon. Is that, like, the challenge with this, I think, is that we go, oh, you know, but I'm just a hack. I'm just a weekend warrior. I'm just, no, you're not. Or even if you were, if that's your story, that's cool. You still have a body that is just as important as Usain Bolt's body in relation to your existence,
and
right?
What you're asking it to do.
Right. You need to manage that body optimally. And so, you know, taking shortcuts with your body is the dumbest thing ever. Yep. Take shortcuts with other things. Don't take a shortcut with your body.
Nothing comes for free.
Let's go to Nanette, I think it is, in Traralgon. Hey, Nanette, how are you?
Yeah, good, thanks.
Now, am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yeah, you are. Just a quick one. You got me thinking about, you're talking about exercise, intensity, age, Stephen Redgrave.
Yes.
And he's an interesting one because he's developed type 2 diabetes as a result of kind of a high junk food diet due to the intensity of the rowing. So he had the belief that, okay, I'm rowing 4 or 5 hours a day, high intensity, high glycolysis, I'm going to pump the sugar in, and he's ended up with type 2 diabetes as a result. So just an interesting one.
Yeah, no, that is. That's a good ad, mate. Thanks for that. Yeah. And I guess that it shows us that even, well, firstly, we don't recommend junk food for anyone at any juncture, but I guess his psychology was, thanks for your call, I guess his psychology was, well, I'm going to burn it off.
Yeah.
And in truth, some people would get away with that. You know, even now, you will still see at some AFL clubs, lollies being handed out post-game because when your glycogen stores are depleted and you're, you know, that's probably the one time where you're just shoveling some simple sugars in, that's okay. But what you're not going to see is players walking to training, shoveling lollies in, or sitting around at home eating Kit Kats and bloody cherry ripes, you know. It's still very strategic. Lots of SMSs coming through. If you'd like to join them, 0433 98 11 16, or if you want to buzz us, 94291116. When we come back, we're going to explore more of the same, but we're also going to talk about different models for eating.
On 1116 SEN, Melbourne's home of footy, the science of sport, with Craig Harper, Jackie Lada and Mark Fabreo.
Oh, and the man with the finger on the other side of the glass is pointing at me, which designates my time to talk, just like I'm talking right now. Jackie Lada, I've put on my stupid FM radio voice. That's right. Where's that? Sorry. What goes on with those? Have you ever met? Before I'd ever done radio, I started doing radio on Fox FM in the 90s, doing a bit with, who was it? Can't remember, but it was fun. Then I did Gold FM for a while, about 6 years. That's right. And but it was funny because I remember meeting a guy once at a station, and off air he's like, yeah, g'day, mate, how you going? Yeah, whatever. Non air he's like, yeah, coming at you live from. I'm like, what's the go with that?
Yeah, let's just go the normal conversation.
Why are there different FM and AM voices?
Don't know.
What's that about?
I don't know.
So we're talking about maximising your genetic potential, looking after your body. A couple of questions off the SMS. Jackie, I'll let you go. Ready, Jackie, set, go.
Okay. So one has come through saying, do you think most people can afford what we're suggesting? Paul from Brunswick. We're not suggesting that you go out and have a whole team around you every single week and pay millions of dollars. But there are ways you can get an allied health plan through your GP, which will give you 5 visits with any allied health practitioner, whether that be a physio or a psychologist or a dietitian or an exercise physiologist, and you get 5 sessions with a Medicare rebate.
I did not know that.
Yeah. Yep. So it's for people who, you know, if they've had ongoing conditions or they want to make some changes and they want to be able to afford to be able to see some practitioners. Mm. So it gives you 5 sessions. You can get a mental health plan, which gives you 10 sessions with a psychologist, provided that you qualify. So generally it's conditions that have been going on for 6 months or longer. So if someone is unhealthy or has had some addictions or some weight issues or whatever, so there's ways to do it cheaper, but sometimes you may only need 1 or 2 sessions with somebody to get the absolute basics, and then you run it yourself and you might go back and see them in 3 months when you can afford it. So that's why we're suggesting it.
Another thing that I'm going to throw in there, I've probably said this in a decade on SEN, I've probably said it 50 times, but so this will be 51. Keep a diary of you.
Yeah.
Keep it not forever, not so you become obsessed or weird, or, but just to learn a bit about how your body responds to different stuff. And even if you go, right, for 10 weeks, I'm just going to record what I do. I'm going to record my sleep, how much water I drink, my food, my exercise, my morning heart rate, how I'm feeling, supplements, recover, everything. I'm going to do all of that, and I'm going to pay attention to what my body's telling me, because your body's always, you know, forget, right? Your body is a biofeedback system. It's telling you stuff all the time. Mm-hmm. Now, you can pay attention, which is a good plan, or you can go, nah, I'll be right, and you can just, keep going forward without kind of listening to those signals.
But if you're saying I'll be right a lot of times to the same thing, then clearly you're wrong.
Now, let's go down to our heroin addict. I like that story.
Yeah, I'm an ex-heroin addict who now rides 300 kilometres a week, runs 20 to 30 Ks a week, and feels the best I ever have at 43. That's fantastic.
Ex-addict, I should say. Yeah. Well done.
Great effort.
Whomever you are, and you know who you are, congratulations.
Yeah.
That is and I work with people at that in that space, and Jackie has as well over time, and let me tell you that...
That is a hard addiction.
That is
break.
A hard addiction. I would say, I'm no guru in this space, but my brief few years working with addicts, I would say heroin and ice.
Heroin's the worst. You can get addicted to heroin in 24 hours.
Mm.
So the quicker a drug works to give you whatever it is you think you need, the higher the addictive value. But I had a client who was, addicted to heroin in 24 hours. So that's a huge effort.
That is a very, very toxic substance. Why don't you go with Susan's and we'll answer that.
Is this the...
The top one on the right side of the screen.
I'm 58 years old and can do 8 kilometres in about 6 minutes, 15 seconds a kilometre, which is
nice.
Quick. Yep. Been running for 8 years now and do 8 kilometres twice a week, 7 kilometres once a week. But hip joints are getting sore, have to stop at 8Ks. Have done 10 when training for a fun run. See, I don't put the words fun and run in the same sentence.
Yeah.
But we'll move on. By 5, but want to increase to 10 to 12 Ks weekly. Any ideas?
Mm. So there's lots of variables here, Susan. And so I'm just going to say some of the things which are quite often issues. So one is, how old are your runners? Sounds boring, I know. But your running shoes should only be used for training, nothing else. So high quality running shoes. Go somewhere, and I have no affiliation with them, go somewhere like the Foot Locker or even a podiatrist who can just see whether or not you pronate, supinate, or whether, you know, just...
Go to a sports podiatrist because they can help with your shoes as well.
And have a look at your biomechanics, have a look at your running, because sometimes the hip problems are actually foot problems that turn into hip problems and eventually back and neck problems. So
yep.
You can get, and again, we spoke about this, it is a little investment, but it's quite often a one-off, you know, it's not like,
once
as Jackie
twice.
Said before, you don't have to go back every week. And so get somebody to look at your running gait, your biomechanics, and see what's going on, because that could be part of it. The next thing is, the surface that you run on really matters. Unless you have to, because you're actually doing an event, don't ever run on concrete, don't ever run on bitumen. Unless you have to. My advice is find grass. And now if that means you've got to go to a park, or you've got to run along the top of the beach, A running track, or even if it means that, you know, you run on the nature strips and you cross a few driveways, it's better than smashing on something that is just totally, totally unforgiving. The other thing that you might want to do is, which you'll totally hate but your body will love, is to chuck in a deep water running session once a week or once a fortnight, where you're still doing the same movement. Obviously you're not working against the same level of resistance, but if you get yourself, you need a proper vest, But if you got in the pool and you did some interval training in the pool where you're pumping your arms and legs and you're doing, you know, look up on YouTube deep water running session or overview or session structure or something like that, you'll get a good idea of a workout.
There and the other one I would add to that is get a foam roller. They hurt like hell, but they do a really good job. If you don't have a foam roller, just use a tennis ball. So areas that are sore, just obviously going back and back and forth can really help when you hit those trigger points. It's painful, but if you do it regularly, it starts to become much better.
Or marry a man or woman who's got really big muscular hands and just is obsessed with massage. Now, Jackie, off the SMS, I will read this. You will answer it. It's how we roll. By the way, David Cranburn, hilarious. I'm loving all your work. Okay, so the question is, can you explain more about the Allied Health Plan? Now, just before, if you've just joined us, Jackie was talking about a way where for not too much money, we can build our own little kind of health team around us. Maybe a dietitian, a psychologist, an exercise physiologist, and a physician to help us build our own health strategy.
Yeah, so an allied health plan is, the reason they call it an allied health plan is because it includes allied health practitioners. So you're looking at psychologists, dietitians, exercise physiologists, osteo, physio. So there's quite a few. I think there's a couple of extras on there. I think you can get some myotherapy or massage. It allows you 5 visits. So your GP has to be the one to write the allied health plan. So you've got to go to your GP first. They will then have a look at what your needs are. And depending on what those needs are, they will then allocate those 5 visits on that plan and write that referral to. So if it's the dietitian and they may say, yep, I can see that you've been battling some weight issues or you need to get healthier. So what I'm going to do is allocate 3 of those sessions to the dietitian. So when you see the dietitian, you will get 3 sessions where you get a Medicare rebate. So you still may be out of pocket a gap, but there is a Medicare rebate if you don't have private health insurance. They then may allocate the other 2 to an exercise physiologist. So therefore, you've got 2 different types of services to at least go and get a start to get some assessments done and see what you need. So go through your GP. And then the other one is your mental health plan, which is only relevant for a psychologist. The GP also writes that, does a questionnaire to see what your needs are and whether they feel that a mental health plan is appropriate. And if that's the case, then you'll get up to 10 sessions per calendar year where you are able to get a rebate, a Medicare rebate for seeing the psychologist.
I was just, as you were saying all of that, and that's resoundingly true and a good idea, I was just thinking about our ex-heroin addict who does all this stuff now, and I was thinking he's still creating a chemical response, right? Yeah. He's still getting a high of sorts, but in a healthy way. Is there a point where, is exercise addiction a thing? Is that a thing?
Yes.
Is that a thing that we need to worry about?
Yep. Absolutely. Because when you start exercising, you're going to release dopamine and serotonin. And most people will know serotonin as the chemical in our body that if you get put onto an antidepressant is usually to increase the uptake of serotonin. So that's the thing that will help us relax, stay calm, sets off that smart part of our brain where we think clearly and whatever. Now, what a lot of people don't understand, 80% of your serotonin is produced in your gut, hence why we say make sure you've got a good diet, because you start playing around with that or skipping food, you impact your serotonin levels, which means that's going to affect your mood, which is why we would always say to somebody, we try exercise first before we put on anyone on an antidepressant, and we check their diet and their sleep. But if you start exercising, you're going to produce dopamine, which is our motivation chemical.
Yeah.
But what happens after a while is what became motivational starts to then to produce more cortisol and adrenaline, because you start to, your brain starts to go, I have to do this exercise. I have to do this before I go out. I can't skip a session. And when it starts to then cross that line, you've moved from that really great part of your brain where it's dopamine serotonin combination to more of the survival part of your brain where it becomes a stress reaction if you don't do it. So the exercise now is producing cortisol and adrenaline rather than dopamine serotonin.
And so I guess the one of the simple, symptoms would be if there's some kind of anxiety or any kind of overthinking or perhaps what you might call, for want of a better term, weird behaviours, or you're hiding behaviour, or you're telling the odd fib, then there might be a warning bell going off there. So,
and before we go to a break, life changes. And if you start putting exercise before social activities, meaning I can't go and have dinner with my friends. Yeah, I've got to exercise instead. That's a problem.
Let's go to Warwick in Barwon Heads. G'day, Warwick. Thanks for waiting.
G'day, how you doing? I'm just ringing up in regards to the Allied Health, creating the Allied Health Network for people.
Go.
Yep. One of the other things that they can do is access student clinics through universities.
Yep.
Supervised facilities with final year students. If it's a management plan or anything thereafter, it's cheap, it's easy, and it's very accessible, and it helps the student.
Yep. Great
that's
idea.
That's a great idea, Warwick.
There are definitely great ways to do it.
Thanks, man. That's a great call, and that's great advice for our listeners. I didn't even know that could happen. We've got lots of SMSs coming through. We were going to talk about food. We might touch on that on the other side of this, or we may not. It's just that our producer, Jackie, last night went and ate vegan. And, you know, I love me a vegetable, but I don't know if I could live on them. So maybe I would love to hear from a vegan, and hand on heart, this is truly authentic. If you're a vegan and you train pretty hard, I want to know how you cope and how you recover, and give us a buzz.
On 1116 SEN, Melbourne's home of footy, the science of sport, with Craig Harper, Jackie Lada and Mark Fabreo.
Welcome back to Melbourne's home of Stephen J. Peak.
Moving on.
Home of sport. It's 16 minutes to 11 o'clock. It is a science sport every Sunday for about 6 months of the year. Jackie Lada, myself, Craig Anthony Harper. Now, we were just giving a shout out to, it appears we don't have one vegan in Melbourne who listens. Is there a vegan? Come on.
There is one.
Is there a vegan who, well, Nate Diaz, of course, is a very famous fighter. He and his brother are both UFC fighters. And is he still vegan, Jackie?
I have some vegan athletes I work with.
Conor McGregor is not a vegan, so don't even type that up. No, he didn't. He didn't get his bottom kicked by a vegan. That was a long time ago. You're out of date. So we're looking for anyone who trains and lifts some weights and does some running. And I just want to know where you get your protein from, where you get your calcium from, how you recover. And again, this is not an interrogation, just curiosity, because I don't think I could do it. But there are quite a lot of vegetarians. But I think vegans, no dairy, no eggs, just all veggies. Am I right
on
that?
Yep.
I'm not an expert in this stuff. So now just quickly off there, we love our listeners because they're all over everything and no allied health plan.
It's now called an enhanced primary care plan.
Right.
So they're right. But it started as an allied plan. So that's my language. Yep. So it's the same plan, but it's called enhanced primary care.
Tomatoes, just quickly. Hi, guys. In regards to running surfaces, what are your views on treadmills? Stephen from Carrara in QLD. Hey, Stephen, thanks for listening. Jep. So I'll start, and then Jackie's actually got a bit of a treadmill story. So my thoughts on treadmills are I don't love treadmills. I'll give the pros and cons. The pros for treadmills are I like them because it's quite controlled. You can work. You can evaluate your progress because you're running on the same machine at the same speed if you want, or a different speed. But you can really get quite strategic and calculating, and you can measure data because you've got all that data in front of you in terms of speed, incline, kilometer per hour, and all of that kind of stuff, right? The downside is that you're running on a surface that doesn't really translate well necessarily when you go outside and run in the real world, for want of a better term. And also because you've got, again, for want of a better term, the ground moving under you. So if you're running at 12 kilometres an hour on a treadmill, it doesn't translate to 12 Ks out on the road. So you want to maybe take about 10 to 12% off that speed to get an accurate idea. So if you're running at 15 Ks, on a treadmill, that would probably equate to close to about 13 Ks in terms of real speed out on the road, because you're not running on a revolving belt when you're running around,
the TAM. You're generating your own speed.
Yeah, that's right. Running. So it does, treadmills do a bit of the work for you. So they're okay. But one of the things that I see, and one of my best friends does this, run on the treadmill holding on. Do not run. Yeah, a lot of people do that in gyms, where they're running and they're actually got their hands, so they're not running like a normal running gait where they're swinging their arms. They're literally got their legs moving, but they're holding on. And sometimes running faster than they can actually run while still holding the side. Now, this is not a rare thing. This is not a... This is maybe 20% of people in gyms who do this at some stage.
It's not even their own weight that they're carrying then.
Peter Siddle is a vegan. Get him on air.
There you go.
Goody.
Just on the treadmill side of things, I was saying to you in the break, I used to run all the time on a treadmill. That was all I did. I didn't run outside. And now this year I've been running outside, and I started the year where I was doing two running sessions outside, one on a treadmill, and I started to get some knee soreness. And what I noticed was the knee soreness was coming after my treadmill sessions, not after my other sessions. So I stopped running on the treadmill, and now I've had no knee issue since the last 6 months. So
interesting, because you would have almost thought, because one of the sales pitches, in inverted commas, with a treadmill is that you're running on a rubber belt and a sprung surface, so it's much more forgiving.
But you change your gait. And I've spoken to the podiatrists at work about this and some of the docs and that as well. So, just an SMS I want to read from a friend of mine who's been a long-term triathlon coach and athletics and a lot of other sports, and he was saying with the conversation we've been having this morning that training consistency is the key for the average athlete. So training 8 to 10 hours a week for a triathlon for 45 weeks a year will get you more than 15 one week for the next week. So consistency, and that's what I found, is I'm not running the same distances. I'm running three times a week, not doing the same distances all the time, one longer run. And it does. It gets you where you go if you've got a good plan.
And I think that's one of the keys with any sport, whether or not it's footy or whether or not it's running or whether or not it's swimming or whether or not it's even MMA, where we see athletes who take a total break and totally decondition their body for 2, 3, 4 months and then go, I'm going to make a comeback. It's just it's an unnecessary slog. So, and we used to see, remember back in the day, do you remember back in the day how fat AFL players would be when they came back? Like, I'm talking.
What do you mean back in the day? Some still come back.
Oh, yeah, but not like when I was at St Kilda 20 years ago nearly 20 years ago, 96, yep. Man, some of those boys would come back.
Which ones though? Because I find with through rugby and AFL, a lot of the time you're Aboriginal and you're Islander boys.
Yeah.
Because culturally,
yeah,
they emotionally eat, so they're often the ones that struggle the most.
Vash in Vermont, I agree with you. Running gait can be modified with a change from heel strike to a 4 foot strike, or even by running shorter and fast steps, so you're not overstriding. Yeah, I think that's good in theory, but I think people being able to do that by themselves, and I don't disagree with you, Vish, I don't disagree with you, but it's like turning that into real world reality for some people. I think they might need some coaching in that space. It is 10 minutes to 11. We'll take our last break.
On 1116 SEN, Melbourne's home of footy, the science of sport, with Craig Harper, Jackie Lada and Mark Fabreo.
Welcome back to Melbourne's home of sport, the science of sport. Jackie Lada, Professor Mark Fabreo is not here today. Coming up after 11 o'clock, the first serve with BP, Paul Aitken and Sean, I think it's Manawira.
Yep.
Between 11 and 12, and I would think from midday, Jackie's typing furiously, from midday till 6 would be Sunday Sports Central. So stick around for that. Lots of great listening. If there's one man that, well, I love lots of men here. I love lots of men and the girls, but lots of men here. But the one man that is the most prepared, most well-researched and resourced and hard-working in terms of prep, it would be, in my humble opinion, Brett Phillips. He does an amazing job. He'll be here all day following us, so stick around for that at 6 minutes to 11.
Yep. So just in answer to someone who has now accused me of being racist with my comments, I'm not holding anything against anybody. It wasn't a racist comment. That was just a fact. We do find in some of our sports that some of our Islander boys and some of the Aboriginal boys, as well as some of our Australian guys, come back, but there are some cultural differences that we have to factor in. So I'm not holding anything against anybody, so sorry if I've offended anybody.
But
that was not a racist comment.
Definitely don't think, but Indigenous and non-Indigenous, some they come back in varying shapes and sizes, and some of that is cultural. And but no, I would not think that Jackie Lauder is a racist at all. At 5 minutes to 11. Great show. Who's this from? Darren in Geelong. I listen most weeks. 42. I've run three separate half marathons this year, recovering with lots of swimming and stretching. Good idea, Darren. Some great tips from you guys. Ah, time for full-time marathon in 2017. Merry Christmas. Hey, Darren, let us know how you go with that full marathon, because that is indeed an effort. 42.2
Ks,
26 miles in the old. And there's, I've done one and I've done three or four halves. And let me tell you, it seems like more than double.
Going Have from you run a marathon?
Yeah,
right.
Going from a half to a marathon, like back in the day when I did a fair bit of running and stuff, I could pretty much just turn up and run a half, not brilliantly, but 21.1 or whatever. You can't just, well, not me, maybe a few freaks can, but you can't just turn up and run a full. Like, you need a lot of prep, but it sounds like you're on the right path because you've done three halves already. Yep. Hi, guys. I've been advised to go to Melbourne Clinic for anxiety disorder. What does Jackie think of the program? Or maybe let's, rather than you commenting on anyone's program, I think it might be just better if you comment on anxiety disorder and potential treatments.
Yeah, well, I think anyone who is suffering from an anxiety disorder, number one, you want to make sure that it's been diagnosed by the right person, whether that be a psychologist or a psychiatrist. So if you are suffering from anxiety and you go to see your GP, they should be referring you to see a psychologist. And if you do have quite an extensive anxiety disorder, that psychologist may be trained particularly in that area, or they'll send you to a psychiatrist first before you start looking at any sort of major clinic programs. That would be my advice. So go to your person.
Anxiety is a really interesting thing, because everybody, including me and you're a psychologist, everybody at some stage experiences, you know, some anxiety.
Well, we all have cortisol and adrenaline in our systems.
Yeah.
So, yes.
So where is there, I mean, this is probably like one of the unanswerable questions that I get asked regularly about bottoms and legs and weight. And but where do we go, right, well, I just experience some semi-regular anxiety because I'm a human being and I have an anxiety disorder. What is there, what's the delineation?
I think the frequency of when it happens, but the impact, if it's really stopping you from doing things and you notice that it detracts if you're in the middle of something, or you start avoiding things. Mm. So it's got to be consistency and intensity where you know you can't work your way through it and you really need some assistance. I mean, that's the easiest way to start.
Is anxiety produced by the situation, the circumstance, or the environment, or is anxiety produced by your thinking in the environment?
Well, generally it's going to be your perception, but it also, the environments that we are in can create the anxiety. If you, and your first 3 years of life are really, really important. That's where we develop our safety net.
Mm.
Your amygdala in your brain, which is what decides whether we're stressed or we're not, that can grow up to 30% larger. So if I was to cut open five brains, don't know who they belong to, had a look at the amygdala, the size of it can grow 30% larger for someone who has a severe anxiety disorder.
Now, there was a very famous case talking about fear and anxiety about, look it up, folks, when you've got nothing to do, but there was a patient, I think they called her Patient X, who her amygdala was, for some reason, destroyed or didn't work. So she did not ever experience fear or anxiety.
Yeah, and that's a concern.
Ever. And you know, so they studied her and they worked with her, and she had amazing stories. One I'll quickly share was, she was a nurse and she was walking home. She used to walk home through a cemetery. Of course she did, right? Because she had no fear. Well, and that was the quickest way home. So she'd take a shortcut through the cemetery, midnight, no fear. And of course she got attacked by a guy one night, knife at her throat, and she thought it was amusing and she laughed at him. She laughed at him because she's like, what are you doing? This is so silly. Laughed at him. And fortunately for her, he was freaked out because her response was completely inappropriate and he took off. But
you don't want to have no amygdala where you don't get that filter.
Because fear plays a survival role.
Yeah, exactly right. So you do need to have that. But that's, I have heard of that study. Interesting.
Mm. All right. we're going to head off. We'll be back. We'll be back the 8th of Jan. I think I'm back. You're back on the 15th. Have a great Christmas, everybody.
Yep. BP. Happy New Year. Be safe.
Thanks, Mikey. Thanks, Jackie, our producer.